This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
This podcast on 97.3 The Fan is presented by Hummel Casino. Fun above all else.
All right, we're halfway home on a Friday. Ben and Woods, 97.3 The Fan. Be careful on the roads. We can't even see the roads from where we sit here high atop the Odyssey Empire studio. I mean, it's as foggy as I've ever seen it. So please be safe out there. We need you around. It is bad, bad. I'm Woodsy. That's Paul Reindel, executive producer. Ben Higgins, your friendly neighborhood sports anchor, joins us as well. It's nasty out there.
We could be in London.
We could.
Thick, pea soup like.
Like at a bog in Scotland.
Ooh, I like that. A fen.
A fen? I've never heard that.
Yeah, that's what they call them like in Scotland.
I thought it was called fen. A bog.
I think they use the word fen sometimes.
Is bog on PC now? You can't call it a bog.
I think like where you get the peat that you use to smoke your scotch, that comes from a peat bog.
Right. What is this fen word?
I don't know. Fen.
How do you spell it?
Is like a watery marshland. F-E-N.
F-E-N.
Fen, yeah.
I've never heard of that. Learn something new every day here on Ben and Woods. Sound like Aaron Rodgers right now, weaving our brilliant vocabulary in. Got to stay sanguine, everybody.
Nice. Oh, all right. We're just waiting for Jake Mintz is going to join us here in a couple of minutes as we get ready for game one of the World Series tonight. It is Jack Flaherty against Garrett Cole. I was searching through some old Juan Soto stuff yesterday, and I had forgotten. You know, Juan Soto homered off of Garrett Cole in Game 1 of the 2019 World Series.
Astros-Nats, yeah.
Now he's teammates with Garrett Cole starting Game 1 of the 2024 World Series. And as long ago, that feels like it was, you know, a lifetime ago. It
really does.
He's still just 25 years
25.
Old. He was 20 when that World Series started in 2019 for the Washington Nationals.
Just Soto shuffling everybody. It was just hysterical. Hysterical. And now, hopefully, he'll be doing it big for the Yankees.
And, you know, are we ready?
Yeah, we are ready.
Yeah, okay, all right. Then let's go out. And joined by our friend Jake Mintz from Cespedes Family Barbecue and Yahoo Sports. Sorry, I was looking away from Paul. I was trying to give the thumbs up signal that Jake was ready. Our segment brought to you by our friends at Grand Ole Barbecue. Jake, happy World Series to you.
Happy World Series to you. I have to say, getting up early to talk to you guys today, now that I'm on the West Coast for the World Series, you folks get up freaking early every day. Jeepers creepers, friends.
You know how many hours have you been up?
You know what time I got up this morning?
You got up
2:30.
Yeah.
2:30.
That's
30.
This is the best time to go to the dentist, man.
Bagel, coffee, back to bed, scrolled Twitter, pulled myself out of bed at 3:30. I was in the office by 4:15, which was just a nightmare.
You folks do the Lord's work.
Thank you.
Yeah, I am out here in Los Angeles for game one of the World Series, which will be here tonight. And I assume you folks are just rooting for a meteor.
No, we're rooting for the Yankees. Yeah,
actually,
we're rooting for the Yankees, buddy.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Look, I understand there are three fan bases in America who are rooting particularly heavily for the other side. That would be you folks, the Giants, and the Red Sox.
Yep.
And everyone else is just kind of in the middle, looking for something to attach themselves to, I think.
So you're an O's fan. You cover baseball, but you're an O's fan. So you're obviously rooting for the Dodgers, I would imagine.
No, that is not true.
Which team, then? I wanted to ask this question. If you truly are Midwest baseball fan, but don't care particularly for the Yankees or the Dodgers, which team is more likable and enjoyable? I think the Yankees is the answer there, but what do you think, Jake?
You folks are obviously looking at this from a slightly warped
lens. Of course.
Yeah, 100%.
Which is important and totally understandable.
Impossible to avoid.
I do think you touch on something interesting, which is that this Yankees team is pretty likable.
I thought so, too.
They are.
for a Yankees team.
Yeah.
And what ends up happening, the reason that teams get unlikable is because we see them all the time.
Yep.
Yes, the Astros banged on some trash cans, but part of the reason that Alex Bregman and Altuve became these villains is because it, you know, October 15th, like you just see them every freaking year.
Every October.
And it's like, I need to see something new. We haven't seen any of these Yankees in the World Series, right? There are only three Yankees, I guess, with any World Series experience. That's Rizzo, Cole, and Juan Soto. And that, like, neither of them, none of them have ever done it on the Yankees before. And so you're right. There is a level of freshness to it. Now, at the same time, it's still the Yankees, right? And for a lot of people, that's enough.
Yeah, no doubt.
That's enough.
No doubt.
That really is enough. And I think that the Dodgers are likable more than you would expect from where you're coming from. Ohtani is likable. For you folks, I'm sure he's exhausting to think about because he's omnipresent.
Yeah.
But he is likable. He is easy to watch, easy to follow, easy to root for. He is inherently excellent at the sport.
Right.
All the time. And so the idea that he could get the ultimate prize is fitting and appropriate. And so, like, for me, I often think about who would I be ecstatic for, which people would I be happy for if they won a ring, right? And number one on the list is Brent Honeywell.
Yeah, yeah, your guy.
Dodgers reliever, former Padres reliever. Like, that's the dude, considering the injuries he's battled through. Like, that's who I'd be most happy for. Right. And then it, you just kind of go down the list, like who like in the champagne celebration of the end of the World Series would make me happy?
Tim Hill.
And I think
there's no question.
Yeah,
it's Tim Hill.
No,
for us.
It's Tim Hill. Yeah. It's Tim Hill.
Tim Hill.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Love Tim Hill.
And if you are a fan of any team that's not these two teams, just like go down that list and think about if any of these players have like connections to your own fandom. And then from there, you'll I think it'll the chips will kind of fall as they may.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you can't tell us this, but you're right. This is for other people listening right now.
I feel like Aaron Judge, though.
Aaron Judge is that guy.
Every bit as likable and talented as Shohei Ohtani. He doesn't pitch, but Ohtani this year hasn't done any of that at all. And I don't think that Aaron Judge has really made a misstep at all.
Never. I can't think of any missteps.
We were talking earlier. Jay, he took less to stay with the Yankees. The Padres offered him more, and he took less to stay with the Yankees. No one has ever taken less to stay with the Yankees before.
He just didn't want to be around you buffoons.
That's fair. That's absolutely fair.
I actually just wrote like 2,000 words on Aaron Judge, which you can go read up at Yahoo Sports right now, just about his presence as a captain beyond the batter's box. Like, let's establish a couple things. One, he just delivered the best offensive season we've ever seen since Barry Bonds, right? Like, go look at the numbers. It's true.
Insane.
Two, every time someone says something about being the captain of the Yankees, your eyes roll so far back in your head that you're staring at your brain, right? That is also true. But it is important to think about why Aaron Judge carries himself the way he does, right? He is boring. He never says anything particularly spicy in public. And there's a reason for that. He is someone who's trying to simplify his world because of all of the things that are on his plate. And behind the scenes, they love this guy. Absolutely love this guy. I wrote about a moment from the ALDS. It's hard to think about this now, but the ALDS was tied one game apiece against Kansas City, seventh inning of game three, tie ball game, right? Season in the balance. The Yankees are a couple bounces away from just another embarrassing October exit. Judge strikes out on a check swing call. Bad call. Doesn't swing. They call him out. The dugout erupts. Anger. F-bombs. Hands on head. The whole nine yards. And he doesn't react an inch. He unbuckles his shin guard and he just strolls back out to his position. And we often think about how panic in a dugout in a playoff game is contagious.
Yeah.
And something that a lot of the Yankees talked to me about when I asked them about this moment, they were like, Aaron Judge's calmness is contagious. His steadiness is contagious. They don't homer in the next inning and win the series because Aaron Judge didn't throw a pissy fit, right? But like that stuff over the year helps. And I do think it is very interesting to think about him as this character who has molded himself in the image of Jeter.
Yeah, I like that. That's a really, really good story, and the way that you told it was really good. Talking to our pal Jake Mintz here on Ben and Woods this morning, and so the matchups, though, I mean, it's gonna be great, man. This is Ali Frazier. This is the two heavyweights. Who do you give the advantage to right now? Because I can literally lay in bed at night and I can work these games out in my head, and you know, I feel like it's going seven. I do feel like it's going to go the distance, but you know, some teams have slight advantage here and there. How do you kind of look at it?
I think the Yankees' starting pitching edge is significant. I think that Jack Flaherty, who will start game one tonight and will probably start game five, whenever that is, he was throwing 90 miles an hour in his last time out.
Yep.
He got blasted against the Mets. I mean, he got blasted in his first game against the Padres in the DS, but his most recent start was a little different, where like his heater was just weak and he didn't have command of it. And he started throwing like 50% curveballs and the Mets knocked him out after two and change. Like, it was bad, bad, bad. Right. And he's throwing game one tonight against the Yankees, you know, like that makes me somewhat concerned. But on the flip side, okay, Gerrit Cole didn't look particularly sharp against the Guardians and the Royals offenses.
Yeah.
Do we think that means he's going to dominate the Dodgers? Like, maybe. Baseball's stupid. He could totally do that. But at the end of the day, when you like squeeze it all out, I think the Dodgers having to do one bullpen game in the middle of the series means that they need to hold horses back earlier on to some extent. And I think that if you're looking for something that could be the difference, where the margins are so small, that's what stands out to me.
What's so dumb is these two guys could square off tonight and both go five scoreless. I mean, against these vaunted offenses, and it just, you just never know how it's going to shake out. And that's what's obviously the best part about the playoffs.
Jake Mintz is with us from Seth's with his family barbecue. And Jake, here's a question. I don't know if you've pondered it at all. Juan Soto, does the outcome of the World Series, win or lose, have any impact on his likelihood to re-sign with the Yankees in free agency? Or is that a completely separate issue? Because I can play it out both ways.
Yeah.
You win a World Series, hey, I did it. Now I can move on to another team without feeling like I need to come back. You lose it, you feel like I got unfinished business, I do need to come back. Or you win a World Series, you can go, let's run it back again. How can I leave this team after winning? I don't know if it has any effect at all on this decision.
I don't think we know anything.
We've lived that for a couple years here too. We know how that feels.
Like, I just have no idea. And I think that we just need to go off of like track record and history. So Soto, his agent, is Scott Boras. And Scott Boras clients don't usually act with emotion, right? It is often a cold-hearted, calculated decision about where is the most money coming from. You don't ask for Scott Boras to be your agent if you think you're going to just take a hometown discount, usually, right? Like 95% of the time. And so for me, I'm looking at it with like this real politic kind of pragmatic lens, where if the Yankees win the World Series, the franchise will make more money and then have more money to spend on Juan Soto. And so I think that, to me, I know those margins are small at the end of the day, right? But like, that's the difference to me, if I had to pick something. So I would say them winning makes it more likely for him to stay. If there's a scenario in which they lose in embarrassing fashion and he like becomes the villain or of the clubhouse somehow,
yeah,
I assume that could make him leave. But I think at the end of the day, the outcome of the World Series and the biggest decision of the offseason, where Juan Soto goes, they're disconnected.
It's good to know that whoever wins the World Series, that team will finally be able to sell some of their hats.
Yeah, get some money.
And get some of those out and about in our country.
Because, yeah, make some cash. all that playoff money. I know. I mean, it's just filling up that cash register again. It does feel good.
But like, I was thinking about it earlier in this conversation. I'm 34 years old, Jake, and I grew up like most
people. You look great, Paul.
Oh, thanks, buddy. Great. Appreciate you. I grew up being told you have to hate the Yankees because they just spend, all they do is buy championships and spend money and go to the World Series, win the division every year. They haven't been to a World Series in 15 years. They aren't just buying every single high-priced team or player. In fact, they're playing a team that is now just going out and buying. Like, the Dodgers are doing what the Yankees used to do, and we were told you got to hate the Yankees for that. So I would assume that, you know, Joe Cardinals fan would not be rooting for the Dodgers.
Yeah, it's interesting.
You bring up something very funny. So, you know, I coached Little League in New York, and a couple years ago, during October, one of the kids shows up to practice in a Luke Voit jersey, which is hilarious in and of itself, right?
Love
and I'm like, what do you think of the Yankees' chances? And the kid goes, they're just going to blow it like they always do. And this kid is 11 or 12. And this kid has only seen
the Yankees
blow it. Like, you know, he was born in 2011 or whatever.
Yeah, the Astros so just like, kicking their ass every year.
Oh, my God. It was so funny. They're going to blow it like they always do. And you're right. Like, the perception of when you're born in the baseball you watch as you get older when you're a kid shapes the way you think about all these teams, right? Like, I imagine for someone who grew up during, like, the early 90s, like, the Braves were the hated foe. And there were probably people who hated the Orioles from the 1970s, right? Like, you're right that now the Dodgers have become more Yankees than the Yankees.
Yeah.
But it's not as if the Yankees are the A's.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, exactly.
It's, you know, they're still spent a lot of money to make sure Aaron Judge is still around.
I think the opposite is funny. I think about Woods' 6-year-old, baseball obsessed 6-year-old, who has grown up in a world in which the Padres are good.
Yeah. They're good.
I mean, they're good.
They're good enough to make the playoffs. Yeah.
Exciting team. And, you know, everyone says, oh, yeah. I mean, his only experience is with the Padres essentially being
really good
playoff contenders every year.
Having star player
four decades of like, oh, yeah, every 12 years we may have a chance to make the playoffs. That's not
crazy.
That's the funniest part is that they're interesting with stars. It's not necessarily just that they're good, right? It's like your kid is like, wow, there's so much to care about. I wish your kid had just like 1 year of memory of Brett Wallace.
Oh, 100%. Like,
just to keep him humble.
100%. He's not.
With all due respect to Brett Wallace.
He will not be humble. And I you know what? I kind of love that for him because I see some of the pain. I've only been here 15 years. He's 6. But I see some of the pain and I hear it and I read it and I see it on Twitter and I hear it from callers and in my DMs. And I'm like, I don't want that pain for my son. I don't want him to try to convince himself, you know, that Jabari Blash is going to be the next big slugger in Major League Baseball. Yeah. But
good thing this Padres season didn't end with any pain.
Yeah. He was over it the next day. He was like, I loved it. He had a blast this season. And you know, I think that's the right perspective.
That's how you guys felt too?
No, not us.
We're still getting 2 weeks later. We're still a little working out our feelings here.
That's exactly. We're still.
It was last time we talked to you was the day it ended, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's sad.
The morning it ended. The amount of optimism. Mm. You were not feeling good, if I remember correctly.
No.
You folks were nervous.
We were not doing well.
I was headed up to you are today, Dodger Stadium. So,
it is better to have loved and lost.
That's true.
To the Dodgers than never to have loved at all.
Jake, it's 8:18 in the morning in L.A. Leave now. Try to leave. Where are you staying in proximity to Dodger Stadium? That's what I want to know.
That's a great joke. I am downtown, so I will be okay. It is like a 10-minute drive from where I am, so it'll take me about an hour and a half.
Yeah.
I'm also going in an off time way before the crowd and coming back after them. So I could walk if I needed to. It's like 2.5 miles from here.
Nice.
That being said, whew.
It's a gnarly 2.5 miles.
It is.
I'm not just saying this because I'm on a San Diego radio show, but like, you give me San Diego or LA
any day.
It's not close. Not a question.
It's not even close. Thank you, brother. Appreciate you, man.
Jake.
Have fun.
Have fun. Yeah.
Will do.
There he is. Jake Mintz, Cespedes Family Barbecue, Yahoo Sports. Our segment brought to you by our friends at Grand Ole Barbecue. Try the brisket. Thank me later. It's absolutely incredible.
What a great
segment. Did we actually get a pick from him or not? We didn't.
No, we didn't.
We didn't get an official pick.
I think Yankees, he said, maybe
he leaned. Yankees.
He said,
starting pitching.
He said, because the Dodgers are going to have to be careful with their bullpen and go to the bullpen day, that could be the edge in the series.
Yeah.
So lean Yankees. Did get a good I did get a good response when I questioned why is Jack Flaherty have so many question marks, which they clearly do. John on Twitter said, Dodgers starting Flaherty in game one because he can at least pitch on 4 days rest. Yamamoto always needs five days rest. So if he starts game two, you got the two off days before and after, before game three, after game five, so he can pitch on his kind of usual 5 days rest. So that does make logistical sense for the Dodgers.
Imagine not being able to, imagine not even saying, don't worry about my extra day of rest. I barely pitch this year. You pay me $324 million. I'll pitch when you need me to.
You won't be happy if it goes to game five and you're down 3-1 and you're relying on Jack Flaherty's like noodle arm falling off to save your season at that point.
Right. But yeah, have fun.
All right. We will come back.
I guess I'm just built different. Whatever you guys need.
Definitely have some interesting, I think some interesting tidbits about the possible Padres pitching rotation from Kevin Acey this morning. We'll get to that coming up after traffic here on 97.3 The Fan. Just in case you didn't hear him the first five or six times he said it, Dave Roberts once again reiterated that Shohei Ohtani will not be pitching in the World Series, creating headlines again. He hasn't even saying that for about 3 or 4 weeks. For one day, they opened the door
to
the possibility.
They had him throwing, and he's been on a throwing program. And there was actually,
as any pitcher is after Tommy John surgery. Joe Musgrove is supposed to, if everything goes well, begin his throwing program at spring training.
Nice.
Doesn't mean we're going to see him at all next season. Just because Ohtani is throwing off a mound doesn't mean he's ready to pitch in a Major League Baseball game.
You know, I actually got a hot tip about this exact topic a few weeks ago. I was talking to somebody who shares an agent with Shohei Ohtani.
Mm-hmm.
And we started talking about the idea of Ohtani pitching. And he goes, yeah, when I heard that, I looked into it. I started asking my guys over there. And I go, is this a real thing? And they said, no. 0% chance he pitches this October. This was like the beginning of the playoffs, right before the playoffs. Like 0% chance. In fact, we have no idea why Dave even threw that out there, because now that's all Shohei's going to be asked throughout the duration of the playoffs. Are you going to pitch? Are you going to pitch? It was never a possibility. It was not even close to being a possibility.
You would think some of this stuff would come back and bite Dave Roberts in the ass, as it usually does in October, and it has not yet. So, I don't think there's any chance that they do that. That would be, I mean, let's call it what it is. It would be some of the most elite cinema of all time. You know, you see him
comes out in game seven
between innings. You see him walk to the bullpen.
Yeah. Just like one inning to close out game seven, like he did in the World Baseball Classic.
Remember how sick that was? Him versus incredible. Trout. Now imagine him versus Judge or Soto in the ninth inning.
Both of them in the ninth inning in a one-run game.
I think my head would cave in. just cave in.
I mean, you always accuse Dave Roberts of being a moment chaser. That would be the ultimate moment.
That's the ultimate one.
You couldn't recreate it, because you'd need a pitcher who's been out for, you know, over a year to make it that dramatic, to come back in game seven.
It's like a Disney movie, man.
But
the downside is,
I mean, so astronomical. He goes out there, doesn't pitch well, blows the World Series, hurts himself again. You're like, wow, that really, really backfired on us.
Yeah.
Here's my prediction. If the World Series comes down to a game seven, ninth inning situation with a one-run game, you will see Blake Treinen in the game for the Los Angeles Dodgers, not Shohei Ohtani.
It's probably a better move.
And if you're a Dodger fan, I'd feel pretty good about that based on what I've seen from Blake Treinen this month.
Like almost unhittable Blake Treinen. So, yeah, no, there's no reason for that to happen. Won't happen, but he will be probably ready to go next season.
All right, we will come back. Who are the Padres going after for their pitching rotation with Joe Musgrove out next season? Because it appears they are looking to add arms.
Good.
Despite, you know, budgetary concerns and everything else, other players that they need to bring back. Looks like the Padres are going after some arms. We will give you the update on that story when we return with Ben and Woods on San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan. A couple of new tidbits this morning in the Union Tribune on the Padres offseason. Nothing earth-shattering necessarily. We all know the question marks facing the Padres. We've spent 2 weeks pretty much going through the off-season questions.
Love the off-season questions.
You know, Luis Arraez, for instance, mentions, you know, they could sign him to a multi-year deal that could actually help lower his CBT number if the average is less than what he would make in arbitration this year. Kevin Acey did write, and because I did suggest the possibility earlier this week, that the Padres do not seem likely to non-tender Arraez. They would not risk losing him in free agency by not offering him arbitration.
Sure.
So ultimately, if Luis Arraez does not sign a contract extension, he will be making that arbitration figure, whatever the projection was, $13-14 million somewhere. And that will be what he costs also against the CBT level. But they gave up, remember, Dylan Head and a couple of other prospects to get him. And, you know, they want him to be more than just a rental.
Sure.
Which I understand.
I do too.
I think we mostly...
And healthy. You know, healthy. Not a torn ligament in his thumb.
It's funny. I think there's an absolutely legitimate conversation about Arraez's value.
Yes.
And what it is, you know, in baseball and to the Padres. But I think for the most part, whatever it is, we all would like to see him back.
Yes, 100%.
You know, whatever role they put him in and however much you get out of him, there's no reason not to bring him back if you can. I don't think they're going to find someone better than Luis Arraez, who hits better than Luis Arraez. You know, can you find someone cheaper? Probably. But he's not going to hit 330, 340. And I fully believe there's even a better version of Luis Arraez than the one that was not healthy for most of the season.
Yeah, how could you not? You know, how could you not believe that there... We've seen it, and he's done it. And, you know, again, I know the numbers, and I know the postseason was brutal. And it's just talking about so many of these guys, Benny, that are on the fringes for the Padres, none of them really had good postseason. So it does kind of cloud your judgment a little bit.
That includes Jurickson Profar.
Yep.
They, you know, they had the whole will they won't. They went through the, Padres would probably like him back. Jurickson probably wants to come back, but he also wants to test free agency.
Sure.
What are you willing to pay? Did mention that Kyle Higashioka, they will attempt to sign Higashioka.
But I love Higgy.
You know, he's at free agency. He's due a raise. Luis Campusano will likely be back and get at least one more opportunity for the Padres going forward. But it was in the pitching blurb that I thought you had the most interesting comments. And I want to get to what the Padres may do beyond the guys coming back after a check of traffic here on 97.3 The Fan. All right, so at this point, Kevin Acey and Jeff Sanders are operating under the assumption, and tell me if you agree with this, that right now, Padres pitching rotation looks pretty much like Dylan Cease, Yu Darvish, Michael King, and Randy Vasquez going into spring training next year.
Yes.
Feel pretty confident that even Randy Vasquez is now, after being a spot starter, fifth starter, sixth starter this year, is one of the guys going into next season.
Yeah, he'll absolutely get a turn in the rotation.
I agree with that as well. Well, you know, given health of all those guys, that's where you start. Now, Matt Waldron, they go? Yeah, probably is going to get a shot at it, but is not, you know, you don't ink him into your starting rotation going into next year, but you're certainly happy if Matt Waldron shows up and looks like he did for the, you know, middle chunk of last season. And if that's the case, you got at least five starters.
Are the shackles off on Michael King next year? Like, no, yep. No extended skipping a start, nothing. Like,
yeah, I think he's ready to go.
I mean, in the sense that our shackles are on pretty much every pitch in baseball at this
correct.
Point. But
yes.
To the...
But there's no more, hey, this is his first full season.
No, I don't think there's any talk about, you know, watching his innings that closely. It's like, you know, give us what you can give us. But I'm not expecting him to go out and pitch 240 innings either. So now, after those five, Kevin writes that the Padres are likely, indications are the Padres will seek two pitchers capable of being inserted behind those four, not including Matt Waldron. So two more arms somewhere on the market, either in trade or free agency, that they believe could be starting pitchers to ultimately give them seven workable starting pitchers going into spring training.
Sure.
It's a good place to be.
Yep.
The big question is, who would those guys be? AJ has done a nice job in recent years, especially with the whole Seth Lugo, Michael Wacha, Nick Martinez triumvirate in 2023. Kind of amazing that season didn't work out because of how well those guys all worked out.
The absolute X factors of that team, we all said, if these guys have a good year, there's no way we miss the playoffs. They had brilliant years, and we still missed the playoffs.
Now, do those guys exist out there? Because they're probably not on your radar at the moment. The way that, if I remember correctly, you know, I had no idea who Nick Martinez was.
Yeah, never heard of him.
Certainly had heard of Seth Lugo, but wasn't projecting him as a big-time starting pitcher the way he's become. And Michael Wacha was, you know, he was a spring training ad that seemed kind of like superfluous.
Superfluous and punty.
Why do we need Michael Wacha for? Yeah. Turned out they needed him and more that season. I don't know that we know any of those names that AJ may be looking at. That, to me, is the biggest mystery and intriguing factor. If he's really going after two pitchers, who are these guys and where is he going to find them this offseason?
And I don't know that it's going to be, you know, I pretty much do know it's not going to be frontline guys of the frontline.
I don't believe Blake Snell is one of the two.
Yeah, I don't think so either. As much as I'd love to have Snellzilla back.
Corbin Burns is probably one of the two.
Correct. But, you know, I guess, you know, you put your faith that you can recapture that magic and turn him over to Ruben and see what Ruben can do and get the best out of him.
Yeah, and while, you know, Kevin doesn't specifically say it's not, he said inserted behind Cease, Darvish, King, and Vasquez. That including Vasquez. If you're inserting someone behind Vasquez, it's not Blake Snell.
Correct.
It's not Corbin Burns. We're looking at lower level, cheaper arms that could go into the starting rotation. Now, another thing that we have kind of brought up as well. So the Padres don't seem inclined. It's not inconceivable that the Padres would trade Dylan Cease, but they don't seem inclined to do that. They know they're going to get pretty confidently 180 innings or more from Dylan Cease, 200 strikeouts. He will have runs throughout the season like we saw where he has no-hit stuff. Also somewhat, you know, inconsistent, and it's perhaps going to affect their decision of whether they want to sign him long-term. But if you're trying to win next season, you're better off with Dylan Cease than without Dylan Cease.
I agree. I do agree. And you know, I think you need to be okay if you're a Padres fan saying, okay, well, we've got you for another year. Let's go out and try to win a World Series again. And then, you know, he can test free agency
and
when he's done.
You kind of have to let him go. Yeah. He says it would take a special deal that brings back major league ready arms. Someone's willing to overpay for Dylan Cease, you listen.
Yep.
Especially with him approaching free agency. But the indications are that the Padres are not going to simply shop Dylan Cease around because they're trying to save money and not pay him his arbitration figure, whatever that is in the 15 to 18 million dollar range, I think we've seen. So that's some of the stuff on pitching. They said they could make a play to extend Dylan Cease or Michael King, but here's the problem with any contract extensions other than Luis Arraez, who you might be able to save money on with a contract extension. Any contract extension this offseason, you could backload it, you could save money this year by, hey, Michael, we'll give you 10 this year, but then 20, 25, and 27 the next 3 years. And he might go for that, but that hurts your luxury tax number because they average those numbers. And all of a sudden, instead of a $13 million pitcher, Michael King's a $20 million pitcher. Same goes, honestly, and they mentioned this, with Jackson Merrill. A contract extension for Jackson Merrill is very problematic for the Padres in this particular offseason.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, you may only give him an extra, we'll give you $2 million this year, just to front load, you know, more than you would have made otherwise, which is great for Jackson. But the big money, the 20, 25, 30, 35, that comes 7, 8 years down the road, which makes perfect sense. Except, all of a sudden, instead of counting the minimum against your luxury tax, which Jackson Merrill is going to this year, he may start counting $25 million against your luxury tax. And now you're paying even more on top of that for a player that was going to just be an $850,000 player for you next season. Now you're paying luxury tax money and his salary. It makes it really hard to do a Jackson Merrill contract extension this offseason.
The one X factor that really could change the entire game for the San Diego Padres in 2025 is Roky Sasaki. And people are bringing him up in the chat. You know, you can get him for the international slot money, which isn't a ton, but there's so many things that, have to fall into place. He's got to be willing.
No luxury tax implications
right.
at all.
Yeah, I mean,
other than a minimum salary.
He's got to be willing to come here, right? And his team needs to be willing to let him go. And then he has to want to come pitch in San Diego instead of L.A. They asked Dave Roberts about him yesterday. And he
they did?
Oh, yeah. They asked him about Roky Sasaki.
Really?
He said, they said, do you believe the Dodgers' elevated brand in Japan will give you an advantage in signing Sasaki? He said, I hope so. Absolutely. We're thinking alike now. Good for you. Even though he's kind of a country kid from the farm, I think having Ohtani there, Yamamoto there, would make him comfortable. Say, you know what? I'd rather go where I have some friends. Bob Nightingale said that as well yesterday. So I think... But if you could potentially lure him to come here, it does solve a lot of problems pitching-wise for you.
It's the perfect solution.
Oh, yeah.
It's so perfect.
It's the dream.
Obviously, A.J. Preller is going to go at him as hard. If he is available, he will be courted and wooed in every way possible
Correct.
That the Padres know how. They will unleash Hideo Nomo on him. They will unleash Yu Darvish on him. They will do everything they can to sign Roky Sasaki. I have no doubt about that.
Yeah, no stone will be left unturned.
But so will 29 other teams
for
the most part.
So I was reading a little bit about him yesterday, and obviously every single team with international slot money is in. And the Cubs have been sending a ton of scouts to Japan. The Yankees have been sending a ton of scouts to Japan. The Dodgers, the Padres. There's going to be a lot of
Feels like it's a roulette wheel.
It really
is, man. You're hoping the ball lands on your number. And if it does, fantastic. I mean, game-changingly good.
Potentially, yeah.
And if he goes to the Dodgers for the minimum, it's horrible.
It sucks.
It's horrible. And it's a very likely outcome as well.
We then pivot to a basketball show. We're just a basketball show. That's what we do. We'll pick a team. We'll pick a team.
You know,
that's what we'll do.
The dragon becomes an even bigger dragon that would be really fun to slay. But if they parlay like a World Series title
into Roky Sasaki.
Into Shohei Ohtani coming back to pitch at a Cy Young level next year, and they have budgetary freedom to go out and sign a Juan Soto or whoever, it's ridiculous. It's almost bad for baseball if they get to that point where they become so overwhelmingly dominant and favorites that it's not just the Padres who would be like throwing their arms in the air. It would be everybody in baseball.
Yeah.
Even the Yankees would be going, come on, dude. Like, you know, we're the Yankees, and you're like, this isn't even fun for the rest of us if you're going to do this.
Well, when you get Ohtani for $2 million a year, you know, and then you get Roky Sasaki, it's going to be a tough
minimum.
It would be a tough pill to swallow, but you know, c'est la vie. You got to roll with the punches and figure it out. You can't fold. You know, throw in the towel. Certainly, but he would be a guy that comes in and solves just so much. He just solves so much. Financial flexibility, elite stuff, the right age, the right makeup, all of it. He's really kind of the perfect prospect, much like Shohei was, you know, except Roky doesn't hit. But, you know, other than that, man, the pitching side, he solves a lot. And, I really hope.
I mean, I almost don't even dare to dream on it. Like, when have we been so
lucky
as an organization that that's going to happen for us? But it could. I would say the Padres are positioned as well as anyone to make a run at him. I mean, that's been part of the plan and the strategy. So, I know it very well could go the other
sure.
way.
Sure, yeah, it absolutely
Kyle
could.
Glazer in a couple weeks ago, and he was talking about Roky Sasaki, and he made it sound like it's still very much a question of whether or not he even gets posted.
Correct.
I don't remember. What are, like, deadlines on any of that?
It's actually, I think they can kind of pick when they, the window opens when it happens, and then there's, like, a six-week time frame or something where they can do all their, but sometimes it doesn't open until December. Sometimes it opens November. It just is when they decide to do it, if they're going to do it.
If they'll let him go without a massive posting fee.
And there's no reason for his team to let him go.
None. It's actually very detrimental.
I'm sure they would very much like to keep him. But at the same time, if they have had a deal under the table for years, like, I really want to go. I will do one more year for you.
Yeah.
You can't hold people hostage necessarily.
Right.
And if it's become that situation where Roky Sasaki feels like he's being held hostage by his own team. You don't want that either. Yep. And you know, all right, I guess there's not much else we can do other than let him go if that's really what he wants.
If he comes back to you, he's yours forever.
True.
Yeah, if you love something, let it go. And if it comes back to you.
Don't think he's coming back to Chiva Latte or whatever his team
is. So Jay to the JO says, aren't the fees to even talk to them still 20 to 30 million?
Not for him.
I don't think so. Not for him. It's a different type of deal.
I don't think that affects your luxury tax at all.
I don't think so either. I don't think the Padres have to stroke a check for $30 million to talk to him. I don't think they will.
Now, if it was Yamamoto, you know, the normal posting system, the Dodgers had to not only pay him the $325 million, but they had to give like a percentage to his team as well. But this would be different if he comes over this year.
Like I said, he's the perfect solution.
Perfect solution.
So don't mess it up, AJ, if you're listening.
Good luck.
Go get it.
Good morning, guys.
Hey, good morning. Go get Roky Sasaki.
All right. Paulie's got some headlines in the Rondo Report coming up next. I got my Super Saturday college football schedule as well. Final hour, Bennett Woods.